this episode, Sean McGue, vice president at Wheels Up, joins us to talk about their announced merger with Delta Private Jets.
Sean also talks about his background working at Nextent Aerospace and Ariane Supersonic.
And of course, he wraps it up with a great story from the road.
You're on 21.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Well, happy holidays and welcome back. It's another episode of the 21.5 Show. I've got Max in studio with me.
Hey, everyone.
Max, it's a busy time of year for aviation. We've got the holidays coming up. Everyone wants to fly on December 26th. And I don't know, when I was an airline pilot, this is always a time of year I did not look forward to because it meant I usually had to fly in Christmas. But what about your schedule? Were you able to get it off?
Yeah, my schedule is certainly bittersweet. I mean, I'm bidding three from the bottom in my base right now. So bidding is more of a ceremonious thing for me.
Right.
I almost forgot to bid last time, and it was like 15 minutes before it was due, and I realized it. And I'm like, well, what am I stressing about? Like, it really doesn't matter.
Right.
But either way, I got it in. So my schedule for this month is funny. I got it. I have all three-day trips, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, all weekends off. It's a super senior FO schedule except for in December because Christmas and New Year's on like Wednesday. So of course I work both of those, but I've had all weekends off and, you know, I like to pretend like I'm a lot more senior than I am. Because Christmas and New Year's haven't come yet. Then I'm
right.
Gonna feel real.
Then you're gonna be on the
feel the weight of my lack of seniority. So
I think one of the low points, if I think back about my time at the airlines, was eating at a Chinese food buffet on Christmas Day in Cincinnati one year.
Yep, I ate not that long ago at a Chinese food restaurant in Montrose because we had diverted from Telluride because we couldn't get in and we had to stay in Montrose to try and move the airplane up to Telluride, and it was literally the only restaurant open in town.
Yeah,
which was fine. It was us and the American Airlines crew that was overnighting there.
Any port in a storm, they say, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, we will certainly pour one out for our homies who are going to be flying into ski country on December 26th. That is, as we mentioned in our episode when we talked to Jason about the Aspen operations, that is the ultimate circus in business aviation. So
every year that I was in business aviation, we would fly into Eagle for Vail or Telluride or Aspen or somewhere on like the 27th or 28th a lot of times because we would stay through New Year's, which is prime time for ski time. But, you know, I loved it because I loved to ski.
If you've got some great pictures to share with us about what happens in ski country when you're heading in there, we'd love to share them on the gram. So shoot it over to us at info215podcast, or you can just send us a DM. It's at 215podcast on Instagram.
And for those of you that aren't millennials, he was referring to Instagram.
Right.
When he says the gram.
Do it for the gram.
But I think something to explain. So I think all the guys, business aviation or airline pilots, get that, you know, the way the airline works and the airline flies a full schedule on Christmas and junior guys fly it, and that's just the way it is. So an interesting thing to understand, too, is if you fly charter in 135, a lot of guys that have been in the airlines their whole career probably don't get it. But so the super peak flying, obviously, for business side and airlines, and these big membership fractional companies, they have, you know, they start with a quarter share. So say there's four guys per airplane. Well, guess what? All four of those guys want to fly their quarter share of the airplane at the same time. So what they start doing earlier is they start buying blocks of time on approved charter airplanes that to help bring up this demand. So if you're a charter guy, you already in advance know that you're subject to flying a lot of times over the holidays because NetJets has bought a 10-hour block on your airplane. You experience that all the time, right?
Yeah, they used to buy the guarantees. All the fractional operators would do that. And so it was one of those things. It was nice because you knew what was going to happen, but at the same time, it was a circus. Every year we would predict, okay, what city are they going to make us go to take people to Colorado? So that was the bet. Are we going to go to Dallas or Houston or LA? So every year we'd have a little pool to see who would guess it. So, or the other thing was, it was either Cabo was the other one. So it was one of the two.
The other thing that was interesting is if the owner of the airplane gave you a lot of latitude to manage it as the lead pilot or whatever, that was the one time of year you were in the driver's seat where it wasn't so competitive trying to bid on trips, whereas you were in charge. You'd say, yeah, that's great. We'll sell you a block, but we're just not going to work on Christmas Day. And you could, you know, figure that. So I remember we flew to New York and snowstorm, the whole thing, and then airline home. We're home on Christmas, and then went right back out and work. So you do have some leverage at that time, and they may say no, and then as they oftentimes do, they'll call you back 2 days later and be like, all right, we'll take the block, and you know, no Christmas.
It's really like everything else. It basically just boils down to supply and demand. So last episode, Max, Jamie Stember and James O'Neill were talking to us about business aviation and retention, compensation, a lot of that. And we had a great thread on ProPilot World started. It was called What HR Doesn't Understand About Pilot Pay. And we started to discuss some of the problems with pilots, executives, and HR not understanding or speaking the same language.
Yeah, it was cool because we had all that group of people, the aviation managers and stuff, in that room for the luncheon that we discussed. But then if you put it on a message board and open it up even more broad, it ignites even a better discussion with more input. So
a lot of people were talking about doing an end around HR and going right above HR to negotiate their compensation packages. So I think we probably need to have James come back and talk about that, because I mean, there's got to be some ramifications for doing that.
Yeah, that's a
really delicate situation, I think.
Yeah, it is. And kind of at my last job, you know, we had a big company that was the umbrella, but we were kind of on this other small bucket that was like the personal employees of the owners of the company. Mm-hmm. So if you answered phones or were a computer guy or whatever, that was working for the company directly. And then we, you know, us along with like nannies and assistants and all of that kind of personal interaction with the owners was where we were. So that's how I was able to deal directly with the guy that's writing the checks without HR in between. We basically would figure it out and then just tell HR what we had worked out.
And that's a lot of operators at Fortune companies, that's not an option. So it definitely takes some skillful navigation and planning. So check that thread out on ProPilot World. It's called What HR Doesn't Understand About Pilot Pay. That discussion is ongoing. Some really good advice. Highly recommend it.
We have another big announcement. Somebody on another podcast actually contacted Dylan and I to interview us.
Huge mistake.
For him. No, it was actually pretty cool. That drops on December 23rd.
Yeah, Dr. George Nolley had us on his podcast, which is called the Ready for Takeoff podcast. Our interview airs on December 23rd, and we reveal something very personal that maybe some of our listeners don't know. So you'll have to tune in to listen to that podcast for all the details. Okay, coming up, we've got an interview with Sean McGue. It was really interesting to talk to him. We had this interview set up for a week or two, and then all of a sudden in our inbox the other day pops in this announcement about the merger between Wheels Up and Delta Private Jets. So the timing kind of worked out great.
Yeah, and so he'll give his take on that and a bunch of other things. Sean has some great experience in aviation. He worked at NextDent Aerospace, which is a company that modifies existing airframes and updates them with engines and avionics a lot of times. And then he worked for Aireon, which is the supersonic business jet that's currently in development. So we talked to him about Wheels Up and his experience at both of those other companies that are pretty interesting. Stand by to stand by.
Before we start the interview with Sean, I wanted to mention our friends at Harvey Watt. They provide a variety of coverages to professional pilots, including pilot disability insurance and life insurance. You still have a couple of weeks left to take advantage of their end-of-year special on life insurance with no medical exam. Details at harveywatt.com. All right, let's get on to the interview. On the line today, we have Sean McGue, Executive Vice President for Wheels Up. Sean's background in aviation includes some of the biggest names in the industry, including Aireon Supersonic, NextDent, and Hawker Beechcraft. Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Sean.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and a lot of your listeners.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. Sean, why don't you just kind of start off with a little bit of an introduction and background on your career in aviation?
You know, I started off my career always wanting to be an airline pilot. I had aspirations as a young child to fly the heavies that I would see fly over my head in Portmarnock, Ireland, which was the final approach path into Dublin Airport. At a very early age, my mother brought us all back to America because she thought there was a much better opportunity for us to fly and learn to fly, I should say, in America. So I went to college first in New Hampshire, now Daniel Webster, which had a great flight program, which unfortunately isn't there anymore. But then migrated south to where the weather was much warmer to flight safety, where I completed all my ratings in Vero Beach. And then I took a short drive up A1A and found this college called Florida Tech and much preferred the weather and the environment in Florida than migrating back north to New Hampshire. So that's where I completed all my ratings and degree, and then found myself with a company called Diamond Aircraft after graduation, which was a new company that was selling these Rotex engine composite airplanes, which was so different and diverged from the standard trainers that I was used to. So that's kind of where I got my career started. And then from there, I never really looked back. I just enjoyed selling and enjoyed engaging with folks in the industry that wanted to do things differently and needed a vehicle to do it with. So I've always been in airplane sales.
How did I'm curious, Daniel Webster up in New Hampshire, how you do flight training all winter long there seems kind of difficult.
Yeah, it's funny. I managed to get my first solo in, and I actually soloed on my birthday. And it was funny because the guy I did my solo with was a guy called Will Sheriff. And Will looked at me and said, "I think you're ready." And I said, "Well, funny, Will, it's my birthday. So, you know, you got to do something for me." And Will turned to me and said, "Well, it's my birthday too. Just go for it." So, you know, I took to the skies and took off out of Nashua, New Hampshire, in a beautiful 152. And sure enough, as I got airborne, it started to snow on an October 17th day. And I managed to survive. I figured I came into this world on this day. I may as well either go out of it or make an impression. So I had a very good time. And the worst part about it is in Daniel Webster, once you soloed, not only did you get your tie cut, but you got thrown into the local pond.
So, ooh.
It was quite an experience and one I'll never forget.
Wow, that's a great story.
We had a buddy that went there. They had actually kind of a cool pro. I think they had sailplanes. They had a Cap 232, which is like a wood wing aerobatic.
Yeah.
They did training in. Yeah. It was pretty cool. It's too bad that, I don't know. I think that they had a kind of a unique approach back when, because we all met at Embry-Riddle. He was telling us it certainly wasn't anything they were doing.
Yeah, it was a great little aerobatic French airplane. You're exactly right. And the glider program was spectacular. And it was the two things that really attracted me to go to the program. And I also played soccer up there. So it was fun. But the weather wasn't conducive to flying. So that's why I moved south.
Okay. Tell us what you do at Wheels Up right now.
Yeah, so I'm an executive vice president. I've been here for a little over 18 months. I really focus on the corporate business side, and that's been a very vibrant business for Wheels Up, especially in the last 12 months. We've been able to bring on a number of different Fortune 100, Fortune 500, and significant flight departments across the country that look to Wheels Up to supplement their current flight needs. So, you know, you'll have a department or an aircraft operator that may have, you know, a number of trips in any given year. And whether the airplane's down for maintenance or it's more practical to use Wheels Up as opposed to deadheading the airplane all the way back to the domicile base, they'll call on us. So our membership is a membership that is really simple. It's easy to join. You get access to a core fleet of airplanes, 119 airplanes, and of which has just expanded to 190 airplanes. From the news you may have heard yesterday with our partnership with Delta Private Jets.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting news. So where do you see that taking you guys?
You know, the partnership between Wheels Up and Delta Airlines will provide more consumers with unique access to Wheels Up private aviation platforms that are already in place. And the exciting part of it is we get access to Delta's global network, you know, creating unparalleled travel experiences in the private and commercial aviation space. It's really the first of its kind, guys, that's happened in this space where you've seen a commercial airline and a business aviation company partner up.
Yeah, that's a cool model because you guys fly smaller, not long-range intercontinental airplanes, which, as we all know, are exponentially more expensive to operate than the lighter airplanes. And so you can stay within that market and connect people to international travel through Delta. They can go private there and then be in Delta One first class on the way to Europe or whatever.
Yeah, Max, you're exactly right. Kenny Dichter, our CEO, I mean, says it best. I mean, we'd like to get the last mile. So if you have a customer coming in from overseas or customer flying from California to Atlanta, let us fly the last mile, whether it's to the Bahamas, whether it's to Sea Isle, whether it's to a number of different locations that are so remote that don't offer commercial service. You know, they'll get off Delta and they'll jump on a Wheels Up.
Wheels Up, the model, is a little bit different than a traditional operator. Can you explain to our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with how Wheels Up is different from another traditional operator with its fleet?
So we operate like any large fleet operator. So we have 190 aircraft. We're a 135 operator. We have very stringent safety controls. The aircraft that we have in our core fleet, which is 190 airplanes now with the acquisition of Delta Private Jets, but we also have what's called partners or fleet partners that we have access to. So a little over 1,200 airplanes where we safety vet and verify the crews, make sure they have the same qualifications as our own crews. The aircraft, they meet the certain criteria that our customers and consumers would come to expect, and large flight departments, for that matter, would want to see the same standards. So we physically audit those partners. We have a great safety officer inside the company called Dave. His name is Dave Hewitt. He came across some NetJets. We all put our head on our pillows at night knowing that Dave and his team go through and ensure that all the pilots and aircraft are maintained and to the same standards that we need, such as Wyvern, Argus, Platinum rated. So to answer your question, you get all that great service and that high standardization through a membership. You don't have to buy a card like you do with some programs. You don't have to buy a fraction, but you get all the great service and all the standardization and safety parameters you would come to expect with a program such as that.
The charter industry in general, I think, is going to be changing a lot in the next few years. You see retention of talent becoming more of a challenge for the smaller operators, at least. That's what we've seen here in the Scottsdale market, where you have a lot of pilots. There's a big draw to go fly for the airlines, you know, better schedule and those kind of things. And the pilots that want to stay in 135, they're asking for better schedule improvements that are requiring more crew members per airplane. And I think the larger charter operators can benefit from that because they have those larger rosters of pilots, so they can offer that better schedule. What do you think is going to happen in maybe the next 5 years in the retail charter market?
Well, Dylan, I think you hit the nail right in the head. First of all, talent is everything, and having qualified pilots is great, but we also have pilots that are in the hospitality business because that's so critical to how our members see our service. And that's why we have such a high retention rate. So Gamma Aviation is the operator of all Wheels Up airplanes. And we do have the pick of the litter. We have some of the best pilots in the industry. North of 30% of our crew have ex-military backgrounds. You know, all of them are ATP rated. They all have to be flight trained twice a year through flight safety. And they all have to have a certain amount of time and type, and they only fly one airplane. So I think the future of the charter marketplace, as customers come into this industry, are going to have stringent qualifications that we hold today and we expect of our crews and our operation. Because ultimately, you know, we all want to be flying in a very safe airplane and in a very safe environment. And overall, the industry is very safe. But I do see the qualifications and the operations of these airplanes held to a 135 type like standard that you see with wheels up.
Were you out at an NBAA base this year?
I was, yeah.
Did you see those Uber helicopter, like quadcopter prototypes they had on the floor, and some of the other like ride sharing companies that are trying to get into this air taxi space? What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I was at the opening ceremony with Ed Bolin and Magic Johnson, which I thought was phenomenal to hear a customer like Magic talk so nicely about the industry and how it's helped him over the years. So it was great. But yeah, I did see the future and the peripheral, and they're amazing to see where the industry can go. And listen, I worked for a little airplane company that was, new, and it was composite, and it had a car engine in it, Rotex engine, and people disqualified that at the time. And they're still vibrant, and they're in every part of the planet today flying. So I do see the future, but I often question, how we get the certification and the industry around making it viable for that type of industry to work in parallel with the current industry we all are familiar with.
Yeah, that could end up being the wheels up third connection there. So you go from London to JFK, JFK to wherever, and then the air taxi right to your office or your house.
Where are these things going to land? That's what I can't, like.
Your front lawn, I guess.
It looks cool. It looks really cool. I'd be curious to see.
We actually have a great service today in partnership with HeliFlight, and part of our membership, you get hot flights, and I'm a member. So, I've taken my wife into the city on a Sikorsky from Morristown. You land right downtown Manhattan for $320 because it was a position flight. So believe me, I want to see it happen, because the hour and a half it normally takes me to get into the city, that was 10 minutes. So, and it was worth every bit of $320.
Anytime you can buy time, that's a pretty good use of your dollar, I think.
It is. And, that's the real value of our membership, Dylan, is we're a pay-as-you-go membership. Certainly, our members can put down what we refer to as blocks, and they get better access and some additional amenities with part of the membership. But a lot of our members, pay the annual subscription fee. They have access to the fleet when they need it. It's an insurance policy in their back pocket. And, they may fly New York to L.A. commercial, and then they jump in at Santa Monica and fly up to Napa in one of our King Airs. So it's a nice part of our membership that, we've introduced a lot of people into the space. And Kenny Dichter always refers to democratizing the space. And in the 19 months I've been here, I've seen it firsthand.
So with the high standards you guys hold for your crews, where do you see the retention and acquisition of new talent coming from for your side of the business?
Well, I think first and foremost, you've got to treat employees well. And as I mentioned, over 30% of our crews come from military backgrounds. So, they are the pick of the litter. They could go anywhere and work. But I firmly believe the way our partner Gamma looks after them. And we are very much involved in that process too. Dave Kaufman, who runs our flight operations, is at Gamma on a weekly basis, talking to the crews, communicating with the crews, ensuring that, we're meeting and being very transparent with them on the business. So that's a big part of it. Finding new crews, that's an industry-wide concern. I think we all have. I think we have to look toward the universities like Everett-Riddle, Max, where you went to, and the Florida Techs where I went to look at the next talent pool and show them that there's a career path that may not be the airlines. It's business aviation. It's a exciting place to be. It's a very vibrant part of our industry and a place that you can call a career, once you graduate.
Yeah, that is really the challenge. Max and I are both involved with the Arizona Business Aviation here, and we issue scholarships to students to encourage people to get into business aviation, and it's a real challenge. What we've actually started to do is sponsor students to go to NBAA, because we thought that's really one of the best places to display our industry and show students that there is an alternative path to the airlines.
Yeah, I mean, the default for any aspiring pilot at a young age is always to be an airline pilot. That's where it was for me. That's where it was for you, Dylan. And I think most guys that are in business aviation never, when they started wanting to fly, didn't say, I want to grow up and be a business aviation pilot. So by promoting that at a younger age to show alternative paths than just the airlines, especially when the airlines are in such the news now with hiring and pilots, I think it's more important now than ever.
Yeah. And especially, Sean, I think what Wheels Up does is they have a good presence online with social media. And I think that's definitely got to help to attract people, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does. We have a very strong social media presence. You know, how our membership works is a number of ways. We've got different buckets. We have a membership model, which is kind of like Netflix as opposed to NetJets, where you pay a subscription fee to be in the club. And being in the club is also very social. A lot of our members will meet, they'll fly together, they will, you know, socialize together at the many events we do across the country. Because let's be frank, our industry is exciting. The guys want to be at the cocktail parties saying they've got a private aviation solution. And we've offered a new way of letting more people do that. And I think at the end of the day, the more people that can socialize who Wheels Up are, you know, can talk about potential career paths. You know, we have an amazing internship program we do every year that Lori Silvestro, who runs our HR, has to be commended for, where we bring in college students from all across the country. It's very competitive. It's a paid internship. They get to work in our headquarters for several months in Times Square in New York. And those students go back to campus and they talk about Wheels Up and they talk about how it's revolutionary and how it's going to change the face of business aviation. And I think it's those types of things. And the last thing I'll leave you with, which refers back to the pilot challenges, and forgive me if I'm rambling, but Top Gun's coming out next year. And that was what propelled me to become a pilot. Let's be frank. I was a junior in high school. I knew I wanted to be a pilot, but that movie, without a doubt, made me walk down to my guidance counselor and say, how do I do this? And the neat thing about Maverick in the new Top Gun, he's a flight instructor, and he chose to keep doing flight instruction, which I think is also a challenge we are faced with today with the next generation of pilots, is maintaining good quality instructors and to ensure that, you know, they are there to bring on the next generation of pilots. So, long-winded answer, but that's kind of what I wanted to share with you when we were talking about the pilot.
Are we going to see a Wheels Up cameo in the new film?
Well, you know, Kenny is very creative, and he's found himself on the cameos of Billions, Entourage, so you never know.
But anyway, to shift gears, you have an interesting background that we left out. We jumped right from when you're a Diamond up to Wheels Up, but you also worked for Nextent Aerospace and also for Aireon. So I guess we'll start at Nextent. For those of you guys that don't know, Nextent is a company that started, and they would take existing airplanes and in a sense refurbish them, re-engine them, do new interiors and avionics, and turn them into a new airplane. So can you kind of tell us about where you started there and ended up?
Yeah, so I left a 15-year career at Hawker Beechcraft, which was extremely good to me. Worked with some of the best people in the industry. Took me to many parts of the planet where I got to sell and fly phenomenal Hawker Beechcraft aircraft. So when I left Hawker Beechcraft, I was looking for an opportunity where I could run my own company and be part of a new segment of the industry. And when Ken Rickey approached me to run Nextent Aerospace, it was one of those opportunities where I saw that was so different, so unique, that it could create not only a problem we had with Beechjet airframes getting older, but where we needed to fill kind of a gap between what used airplanes and new airplanes were selling for, but by giving you all the opportunity to have a used airplane like a new airplane experience. So at Nextent, you know, we literally sold brand new equipment on an older airframe, gave you extended warranties, gave you, you know, the performance you were seeing in the marketplace to some of the newer aircrafts at the time, like Phenom 300, CJ4s, but we were selling it at 50 cents on the dollar. So it was a very strong value proposition, and it got global acceptance, and we were certifying airplanes throughout the world and had a great member base. And we really acted like a little mini OEM. So it was a very exciting time. Had a great team there, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Max and I both flew the Beach Jet, and it was such a great airplane. All the passengers really liked the cabin, and the baggage was a little tight, but it was so cool that you guys were able to breathe new life into that airplane. Can you talk us through how you look at these legacy airframes that are on the market and how they figure out what they're going to do?
Yeah, so at the time I was there, you really look at the install base of airplanes. You look at the opportunity that it presents with the folks that are flying it. And, you know, at the time, you know, we looked at, you know, how many customers would want to improve and how much would they spend to improve it. And with the next one, with the 400, you know, the logical choice there was, you know, the installed base of airplanes was so large, but you also had such a great cabin, as you both said, that people were willing to spend 50 cents on the dollar compared to a new price of a Phenom 300 to take their $1.5 million or $2 million Beach Jet and to put $2 or $3 million into it, to where they weren't spending $8.5 million, they were spending $5 or $4.5 to $5. So when I think when they looked at the 604, and that was after I left, we certainly looked at the G90 XT because, again, of the size of the installed base of King Air owners, we always looked at ways to finding how do you improve an airplane given more of a, you know, operating benefit to the customer base and to where the price to improve that airplane was a strong enough value proposition to the folks that were looking to do it.
Yeah, and I think one of the genius things that you guys did there is you took it, and it wasn't just an STC, that it wasn't branded as just an STC and an enhancement. You branded it as like a new airplane, which I think was really important because on the back end of it, any owners that were looking at their exit strategy too, at the end of the day, it was a different airplane. It wasn't just a modified Beach Jet. It was a 400 XTI, which was really in the pre-owned marketplace, a different airplane. So it retained value better than just a modified Beach Jet, you know? And I think that was really key. That's what I would have been looking at if I was, you know, looking at that and changing my airplane or buying one.
Yeah, and it wasn't for everybody. Like TMC, who's, you know, obviously part of the Wheels Up umbrella now, they operate 24 400s. Very strong business model, great airplane for our customer base. So, you know, we didn't convert everybody, but we certainly converted a number of airframes that fitted a certain niche. And, you know, that next 400 XTI sold a lot of new airframes across the planet, but it also evolved into a great partnership with the Jayhawk, to where Nexton now upgrades some of the Jayhawk's avionics. So it was widely accepted, and the 604 looks like a great program too, as far as what it can offer those airframes for the cost and value proposition. So it was an exciting time to be there.
I think the 604 is probably the best deal in business aviation. That's my opinion, but for the cost that you can acquire one of those and the capability you get. Now, I'm a 604 pilot, so I'm a little biased, but it is pretty amazing aircraft when you look at the bang for the buck.
Yeah, I think it's good for our industry. I mean, at the end of the day, you're remanufacturing these airplanes, and remanufacturing is a big business in the United States across all industries. But when you're able to take an older airframe, keep it in service, and allow more people to come into the space that ultimately will buy new airplanes, is a good thing.
Can you tell us about any of the airframes that you guys looked at doing some sort of Nextent type thing with and didn't come to fruition because it didn't pencil out or for whatever reason?
It was a fun time to be there. We had a great engineering staff, and we virtually looked at everything. But, you know, we had limited resources, so we couldn't take them all the way to fruition. But at that time, we had a great partnership with GE, which, you know, their team was phenomenal to work with. So we looked at a lot of different types of airframes and cost to market, and then ultimately, would the consumer be prepared to pay for that upgrade? So it was fun.
One last question on the next end. So I flew a G3 for a long time, and I would fly that airplane, and especially as at the end of it here, how inexpensive they were for the capability you get. And obviously, the biggest problem was the engines. You know, too loud, and ate too much gas, and also the avionics. So I always thought that would be such a great airplane to re-engine and put a new panel up front and new interior, and because that just had such great capability and was so reliable. What did you guys ever look at that?
We looked at the Gulfstream models, but you know, Gulfstream arguably has one of the best aftermarket businesses in the industry, and if they're not looking at it, you know, we looked at it from that position, then maybe we shouldn't be either. So again, we looked at a number of different aircraft platforms that obviously could use additional performance enhancements. And, you know, we looked in three areas, obviously range. We looked at cabin, because cabin is what really sells airplanes. How do you improve the cabin? And at Nextant, you know, a lot of people may not have known, but we actually improved the size and the overall width of the cabin by the composite shell that we put inside the cabin. And then, you know, you look at the price point, you know, what is the price point that is that consumer really willing to pay for a remanufactured airplane?
Let's jump from the total opposite side of the scale from the G3 and talk about the Ariane supersonic aircraft that is being developed. You were at Ariane for a couple of years. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience there?
Yeah, so I was offered to come work for Ariane by a great guy called Ernie Edwards. Ernie was the president of Embraer for several years. Ernie and I worked co-in-hand. Well, obviously, I was working for Hawker Beechcraft. Ernie was working for Embraer. But when Ernie left Embraer, I was asked to be on the board of Ariane, and then asked me to come on board shortly after I left Nextant. I wrote my master's thesis on supersonic travel. I was always enamored that that had to happen at some point. It was the next frontier. So I was asked to run North American sales for Ariane, and it was, again, a great team to work with, some of the best engineers in the industry. We went through a number of different phases while I was there. We had an opportunity to work with Lockheed Martin as a partner, and then ultimately Boeing came on board. And the airplane itself is phenomenal, just for the time it'll save folks, and time is money. I see that today, even at Wheels Up. You know, we have folks that use us because we're a time machine.
Exactly. Like I mentioned before, anytime you can buy time, that's a great use of your dollar.
I remember when that airplane was first announced, it was kind of like anything else. You read an AIN or something, you're like, oh, that'd be really cool, you know, but everyone has their doubts. And as it developed, and all of a sudden you're like, wow. And then Lockheed Martin got involved, and then backed by Boeing. And then it's, you know, GE's developing an engine for it. And you're like, wow, this thing could actually come to fruition. I think now, and then you have Flexjet making the orders for it. And it's like, this thing's actually going to happen, which I think is really cool. But the problem nowadays, I think, is developing a clean sheet airplane is so capital intensive and therefore so risky for even Boeing, you know, the big dogs, let alone a startup aviation company. And I suppose that's why they needed the backing. But, you know, how do they get over that huge risk and the amount of capital that it takes?
Well, I think first and foremost, you know, the Flexjet order was a big endorsement to the program. And you know, the time frame that I was there talking to a number of different billionaires and very well-to-do flight departments that had just about every airplane in their stable, you know, did see a value for it and did have a need for it. And, you know, when you look at that airplane's potential, you know, there's going to be several hundred of them that are going to be built over, you know, a period of time that, you know, will justify the need and the capital outsource to bring an airplane like that to fruition.
So you wrote your thesis on supersonic flight. Obviously, the sonic boom issue has been a problem in the past. Can you talk a little bit about the boomless cruise stuff they're working on?
Yeah, so the supersonic boom is no question an issue. When you fly over land, over open water, it's not a problem. They have what's called Mach cutoff. So at 1.2, the airframe definitely creates a boom, but it dissipates before it hits the ground. And they've proven that. Dr. Richard Tracy, who's been with the Ariane project since inception, created what's called supersonic laminar flow. And they've done many wind tunnel tests and analysis, even with NASA, to prove that the boom will dissipate before it hits the ground. So you can fly at 1.2 over the ground. Now, as we all know, the regs don't allow you to fly faster than Mach 1.0 because of the boom issue. But at the end of the day, I think this airplane will be geared to fly over open water. The tracks that this airplane will fly will be over the North Atlantic. That's the most exciting places, or the Pacific, where it can make up considerable time than, say, a conventional business aircraft today. And then if it has to fly over land, it can. It'll just do it at a reduced speed. It can even fly at 0.95. So it's a very versatile airplane that you can, you know, obviously power back and fly within the regulational speed.
And that's just with current regulations. Aren't they working on stuff where you may be able to go supersonic as long as there's no boom heard at the surface?
Yes. Yeah, that's the Mach cutoff that I was referring to. So at 1.2, you can fly at a speed where there won't be any boom. And they're very much so working with, you know, DC and obviously trying to mitigate that older regulation, which has been there, quite frankly, since the Concorde.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's cutting edge stuff.
All right, Sean. Well, as you know, at the end of every episode, we like to ask our guests if they've got a good, funny, or interesting aviation story for us. So just curious if you've got anything for our listeners.
Oh, there's a few, but I can think of one. When I was the president of Hawker Beechcraft in Europe, I had a demo pilot slash salesman that worked for me. And I won't name his name because it's quite embarrassing. But at the time, he was working with a customer that was doing an event at the Goodwood Speed of Sound, which is, if you don't know the Goodwood Speed of Sound, it's a phenomenal race car event in the south of England. You fly in on a grass strip, and the participation we had was in the form of a barter. So we had to go pick up Robert Plant, which for me is one of the most exciting rock bands of all time, Led Zeppelin. And the demo pilot slash salesman didn't know who Robert Plant was. So I had to make the command decision that I was going to fly with him on that trip to ensure that Robert Plant was going to be looked after and make sure that we deliver him to the Goodwood Speed of Sound in safe order. So we went all the way out to Helsinki, where there was a battle of the bands, and we're sitting in the hotel lobby. Some paparazzi were around, and the salesman slash demo pilot looked at me confusingly and said, "I don't see Robert Plant on the passenger list, but I see this Billy Gibson." So to set the flight up for Robert Plant, we had organized cups. We had football jerseys because Robert Plant owned the Wolves, which is a soccer club just north of England. So we were wearing bright orange Wolves football jerseys. We had bright orange paraphernalia throughout the cabin of the King Air that we were flying him back. As it turned out, it wasn't Robert, it was Billy Gibson. So I, at the time, had to Google who Billy Gibson was, and sure enough, he's the lead singer of ZZ Top. So we had the wrong guy, but still a great musician. And to make matters worse, we had these beautiful French bottles of wine that we had on board for Robert Plant, which Mr. Gibson's manager looked at me and said, "That won't do. Billy just likes to drink beer." So I had to go and barter once again and find the Challenger 604 that was sitting on the ramp and give them some fine bottles of wine for all the beer they had. So we ended up flying Billy back to the Goodwood Speed of Sound in the King Air with his beer.
Were you still wearing the jersey?
No, but the funny thing is the manager looked up at us and said, "So what are you guys, NASCAR drivers?" I had to explain to him that we had made a little bit of a mistake, but it all went off well. So that was my funny story.
Oh, my gosh.
That is funny. That's great.
That, listeners, is why business aviation is so fun and exciting, because you never know who you're going to fly. Even if you think you know who you're going
to
fly.
I love the old, you know, trolling the ramp, trying to barter for beer. We've done that. I've done that before in Mexico to get like a quart of oil from somebody and like, you know, "Hey, how you doing? My name's Max."
Yeah. So it's just all part of the fun. You never know what's going to happen. So, Sean, we certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us. It sounds like a really exciting time at Wheels Up. We're going to stay tuned to see more about the merger with Delta Private Jets. Sounds like you guys are really pushing the envelope in the industry. So thank you for continuing to innovate. And if people want to get a hold of you, maybe get any more information about the Alternative Lift Program to help supplement current flight departments, we'll have all of your contact information in the show notes and on our website so they can reach out. And I think it would be really cool next time you guys are doing that internship, we'd love to help you connect students to that. That sounds like a really great opportunity to get people involved in business aviation.
Absolutely. And yeah, Dylan, Max, really appreciate the time. Happy holidays. And I'd welcome any inquiries from any one of your members. So thanks again for having me.
Thanks, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
Appreciate it.
Be on guard. All right. That was our interview with Sean. Appreciate him taking the time to talk to us. Really a fascinating background in aviation.
Yeah, he seems to be where it's at the time. For sure, between Aireon and Nexten and now at Wheels Up. The funny thing about Wheels Up I was going to mention to him is I remember first seeing them with their paint jobs that say up on the tail.
Yeah.
I'd be like, that's kind of a weird paint job, you know, thinking it was a one-off or something like that. And then I'd see, you know, King Air and what they had XLs, right?
Yeah.
And so I'd see that and I'm like, huh, I guess that's a company. And then I remember starting to see a few of them on the ramp. And I'm like, who is this? Like, you could just see them start to grow and it was pretty quick.
Well, especially they were on the West Coast and they started on the East Coast. I think they started in the Northeast and kind of expanded from there. So it was kind of a trickle out here. And then,
yeah, I just remember seeing them kind of pop up and then proliferate all at once. And so they're certainly the tip of the spear in the charter business now.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff. So I'm sure it's not the last time we're going to hear from them.
Yeah.
All right, we have a special treat now.
Very special treat.
Joining us in studio is my dad, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Max. Dylan.
So some of our listeners might have met my dad. Every time he travels on the airlines, we give him a stack of business cards to hand out. And he will show up at the airport, sometimes a couple hours early for his flight. And he'll talk to pilots out there and say, hey, we got a show. There's a podcast my son and his friend have started. And the conversion rate is surprisingly good, we found. We got an email from a guy the other day, and he goes, I think your dad in a terminal gave me a card.
The best part is I'm in an airline terminal multiple ones a day, 3 days a week, and he outsells me on a 100-to-1 probably.
I don't know. He's going to get an official title here at the show, I think, coming up soon. But
super fan or lead promoter?
Head of promotion. So when you approach somebody, Dad, what is it you say? What's your opener?
Usually I just ask them if they're interested in aviation podcasts, if they listen to any. And
that's a good opener. Yeah, what if they say, what's a podcast? What do you say?
I usually move on. I've had a few rejections from people like that, I'm not interested at all. But generally people are listening to podcasts and very interested in what I have to offer them, which is the 21.5 show.
So do you just kind of tell them about it and then hand a card and say, here's where you can find us?
I do. I didn't have cards when we started out. I didn't even know how it started. I was just sitting in the airport and saw a pilot go by and thought, oh, hey, I wonder if they listen to the podcast. So I said, hey, do you listen to aviation podcasts? I don't know which one. So I said, how about the 21.5 show? And we just started talking, and I said, well, I'll check it out. So it kind of evolved from there. Then it's like, hey, this is kind of fun. You know, so every time a pilot would go by or a group of pilots, I'd go up and talk to them. And then, I don't know, when you guys made the business cards.
Yeah.
I had some product in my hand.
We need to make sure we give him some stickers in case he meets anyone that says, oh, yeah, I do listen to that show.
Yes.
Some swag.
If you see Tom in the terminal, he'll come and talk to you. You don't have to find him. He'll find you.
If you're in uniform, he'll
That's right. He will give you a official 21.5 sticker. We have a few different ones. One with our favorite slogan.
Flexibility is the key to air power
and yoga. Yeah.
I want that.
Yeah.
So, I had my 21.5 t-shirt on yesterday.
That's awesome. I have that sticker on my bag. I get comments all the time.
Flight
attendants. So yeah, they always catch it. It's pretty funny. So Tom, I have a question. What does your wife think about when you're running around the terminal handing out cars? Is she just mortified, or does she disassociate with you altogether, or what?
Well, we've been together for about 40 years, so I think she's used to my antics. So.
She doesn't even look up from her magazine.
Yeah, I'll watch the baggage. You go evangelize.
Exactly. That's right.
That's awesome.
Well, Dad, we certainly appreciate you spreading the word. The most rewarding thing is to get the messages from people that say, oh, we talked to your dad in the terminal.
He was your dad.
Yeah. So, Max, you're going to have to start giving him buddy passes, I think.
So we
can get him out there a little bit more.
For sure.
Yeah.
He doesn't live in the same state as we do, so he's got to travel in. So we can certainly do that.
Yeah.
Some sort of promotion buddy pass exchange.
Exactly. Ambassador travel marketing. It's a write-off.
I mean, to give somebody the pleasure of non-revenue travel is really the gift that we'll always keep on giving.
Well, that's actually what we want, right? Because we want him to be in the airport but not make the flight and then just get bumped.
I think
one of the stipulations is
he's not allowed any direct flights.
Yeah.
So he lives in Portland to Phoenix, but we're definitely going to, especially where I work is great because a lot of point-to-point flying, so we can send them to Nashville, Dallas, Denver, and then into Phoenix. It'll be perfect.
And if you miss a couple flights, that's better because you'll be in the terminal longer, so you can talk to more people. So this
is really we'll send them on the flights that have the worst loads and stick them in the airport all day.
I'd be down for that.
One day.
Wow, this is a lot more business cards than you guys usually give me. Why is that?
Huh. So we should have the market saturated, I think, here in like 4 years, maybe. I guess it just depends on how many flights we put them on.
That's great.
Should be good. Well, Dad, we certainly appreciate your support for the show. It's really cool to hear the stories of people interacting with you, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a blast.
Guerrilla marketing at its finest. So, thanks a lot, Pop. All right, we got a couple of great reviews and emails I wanted to share with our listeners. We love when we get feedback from pilots that are listening to the show. First thing we got was a review on Apple iTunes. It says, fantastic podcast. I was recently recommended this podcast by a friend, and I love it. The content is great, and you guys find a way to make it relatable to anyone involved in aviation. And that's from a witty nickname here. Thank you so much for the review. It's a pretty good screen name. It's not as good as my all-time favorite.
Yeah, what was that, guys?
Fatty with Peacocks.
Yeah.
Still need some background on that.
Still looking for Fatty at Peacocks to drop us a note on the gram. Some more feedback we got was in the form of an email. Dylan and Max, we just got turned on to your podcast 2 weeks ago, and I've been binge listening on my 3.5-hour commute to the hangar ever since. Please keep up the good work. It's refreshing, full of knowledge, and even funny. Not easy to do in aviation. I appreciate the different topics that have been covered, and it's great perspective to have an airline and business take on the material. Truly impressed, and I'm spreading the word.
So that was from Justin, and he also sent us a picture of this ChemDog Trails beer.
Yeah, that's
kind of interesting looking. I'll post a picture of it on the gram, and we'll put a link in the show notes for the brewing.
I can't do it.
It kind of looked like good beer, so I'm curious if any of our listeners have had it, but I think it's like brewed in Minneapolis or something. So
yeah, I think that was right, but it's obviously referring to chemtrails in aviation.
So we'll have to see if we can find it.
Because
it
had like a graphic on the can, didn't it? It showed chemtrails and stuff.
Exactly.
That was cool.
I'll have to keep that on the radar next time you're at the brew pub. Well, that's going to do it for another episode of the 21.5 show. Thank you so much to Sean from Wheels Up for joining us. We'll have his contact information in the show notes if you want to get a hold of him for any information about Wheels Up. And then when they do that internship, we should spread the word on that a little bit, because that sounds like a pretty cool deal if you're in college.
Absolutely. We should have the gal that he mentioned that's in charge of that on the show, and a couple other ones too, because there's a lot of opportunities for internships and scholarships. I remember the thing that always sticks in my head is that the Arizona Business Aviation Scholarship Committee that you're on, is what's the hardest part of that?
Spreading the word, awareness. If only one of the members was...
It's hard to get people to apply for free money.
Yeah.
Which I don't know that that's usually a problem in this country.
It is. It's something we're trying to tackle, is raising awareness in college students. Like we said, the airlines have done a really good job of being in the universities and talking to students, setting up the pathway programs. And business aviation needs to do the same thing. We need pilots in whatever sector of the market to join our industry.
From
so.
Banner towing and pipeline patrol to global 6000s and airline guys.
Uber, helicopter,
Lyft, everywhere,
I guess.
Drone pilots.
It's everything.
The need for pilots is very great, as we all know. So
thanks for all of your emails and reviews on iTunes. Keep those coming. It really helps us to get the momentum going. Be sure to check us out on Instagram. It's at 215podcast, the gram. You can get a hold of us via email, info at 215podcast.com. Thank you to everyone who's sending us the aviation license plates. I think I probably just posted maybe 7 or 8 this week.
That has become an incredible thing.
It's a never-ending source.
So long ago. What's the stats on that? Like, how many plates, how many like followers on that account? What kind of statistics do you have on that?
I don't. I just, my statistic is that I thought we would have reached, I mean, we've been doing this for at least 15 years. And they're still getting new plates. So the statistic is that pilot ego
It's a really testament to the pilot ego factor that's just never going to go away and probably get even bigger.
So incredible work by all of you. Please keep it up. Coming up over the holidays, we're sort of going to take a break. We are going to have some content for you. It'll be a little bit of a surprise. We will be there for you on December 31st. And then we're looking forward to all of the stuff we got in the pipeline for 2020.
So as always,
remember, flexibility is the key to air power.